This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm Christina McManigal here with Mike Penna, and welcome back with us. We're together once again.
Yeah. I have to tell you something. After you run this company and you are the main voice of the Horse Racing Radio Network for like a decade, I very rarely get the opportunity to sit over on this side of the fence and be the co-host on a show. So Christina, you're going to steer the ship, and I'm looking forward to this visit here tonight. I'm looking forward to helping you out on the show.
All right. Pressure's on.
The pressure is on. Yeah, don't mess it up, because you have me sitting next to you here today. But I have to tell you something. You ran this show the last 2 weeks and you had some great visits, and I was really happy to see the way that you progressed in that hosting role, and looking forward to watching you take another step here tonight.
Thank you, Mike, and I am looking forward to see how you do as a co-host.
Oh, thanks.
The pressure's
the pressure
on for you, too.
On. Well, you know why it's on? Because how about our guest here tonight? In studio with us.
In studio. We're going to have a blast. Guys, it doesn't get better than this.
Yeah, it's Jockey Joe Bravo.
I'm so nervous this moment. I've never had another jockey interview me before. It's pretty cool.
But we talked about that before we came on the air. She knows all the secrets, right?
Shh, never happened.
Joe Bravo.
I know
unplugged.
All about him. Watch out.
Why every girl I meet say that? It's wrong.
That's not the first
time. Just trying to make
that.
You laugh. That's all.
Well, let me give you a proper introduction, Joe. With 4,992 wins, over $148 million in earnings, 13 riding titles at Monmouth Park, 9 riding titles at the Meadowlands. We're here today in studio with jockey Jersey Joe Bravo.
Oh my God, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here.
You're in rarefied air, you know that? Because the only jockeys to have done the show in studio and not by phone are Chris McCarron. Yeah. And Shane Sellers, yeah. Right? Those are the only two that have been in studio with us. So you
round
out the
trifecta. They were here riding a Keelan meet, I guess?
McCarron, his riding days are a little bit past.
Well,
and Shane too, by the way.
Well, that's why.
You're the first active jockey.
I found it really easy for me to come over here to studio today, because Lexington on a rainy Tuesday, help me help you. What do we do? Come on. It's a day off with no racing. What is much to do here in Lexington on a rainy day?
Well, usually we would have the Wildcats to watch, but unfortunately, we don't.
Man, that's a shame. All I heard was CATS many nights in a row. Then after the game, they didn't say that too often.
Now, you could hear him at Keeneland this past weekend, by the way.
Before the game.
Right before the game,
really?
Before the Final Four, before they got beat by Wisconsin.
No, don't remind me. I'm
the
trying to forget.
The Cats cheer was going out. And then I saw some people walking through that had the Cheesehead hat on.
Yes.
Wisconsin fans. And all I heard was boos down below.
They should be booing them. Throw them out. Yeah. They don't belong here.
It's kind of nice to have somebody else get booed instead of the jockeys, though, isn't it?
Wow, the pressure's off me. That was wild. You know, another thing that was wild, I was there at the races that day, and like, it's coming up to the Bluegrass, and people were leaving here the races, and I'm like, this is one of the best racing days ever. People are leaving, and then I realize, oh, there must be real true Blue Cat fans there. They left some of the best racing in the world to go and watch this basketball game tonight.
They have their priorities.
Yeah, it's a different town. They really love their basketball, and man, they love their horse racing. What was it? Opening day, they had to cancel the last 4 races. They still had 12,000 people at the races. The next day, they had 38,000 people races. Lexington people love horse racing.
They love it.
That's
what this place is about, and we're glad you are here with us in Lexington, Kentucky.
I'm going to enjoy it here. I'm going to be here till like after the Derby weekend, because Monmouth Park, they didn't really open up till May 9th, the following weekend. So I plan on him, like, being a little Southern and enjoy a little bit of your Kentucky living for the month.
Has this been a little culture shock for you?
Yes,
being
sir.
Being a Jersey guy?
Yes, sir.
Yeah?
Trees are a little taller.
Have you gotten some of the language down yet?
How G- y'all doing?
Jeet yet?
Jeet? Yeah. I haven't heard that one yet, but no, it's fun. It really brings you back. And, you know, everybody's so nice. It really is. I don't care where you go here in town. They're just Southern and sweet and nice people. It's a refreshment.
They're almost too nice sometimes. And you're in a hurry and you're at the gas station and the cashier wants to talk to you for 10 minutes.
Christina, lay off the Java. You know, we don't hurry. I learned we slow down here in Kentucky.
Exactly.
It is. I remember moving here from Massachusetts back in 97, and it is a much slower pace.
It's good living.
And I like it, though.
It really is good living. It really is good living.
It fits my speed perfectly.
Well, I like to drive fast, and the people who drive here don't drive too fast. But, you know, that's from us jocks. We like to go fast all the time, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
How did you first get hooked on horse racing? Where did that love come from?
Well, I was cut out, and I was down in Florida trying out for the Heat. The Miami Heat should have kept me on the team. Yeah. I don't know what happened, but sometime during my childhood, can you believe the Miami Heat cut me?
No, the basketball career didn't work out?
LeBron didn't know what he had coming. I could have tore... They could have been in trouble. On a serious note, I like to make a lot of fun. But my father was a jockey, and my grandfather was a jock. I had it so easy growing up as a kid because all my toys were jockey sticks, helmets. I mean, there was no guess. I'm 5'2". Come on. I was made for this, and I love it. I mean, every day, the people I meet in the paddock, it's pretty cool. Anybody who owns a racehorse is usually somebody. You know how many times I walked into a restaurant not knowing nothing and the guy goes, Joe Bravo. He goes, I say, hey, what are you doing? I remember meeting you in a paddock. He goes, yeah, we own it. I'm like, oh, wow, another free dinner. This is cool. Just the perks of the job.
That is nice, Joe. And so you were born into it, basically.
Yeah.
Completely. You're born into it. Do you remember the first time you sat on a thoroughbred racehorse?
All right. I'll tell you even better than that. It's not official horse race, but my first match race I rode when I was 11 years old. I was in Texas. Let's rewind. Everybody knows me as Jersey Joe, and I was born in Long Branch, New Jersey, but I really didn't grow up there as a kid. When I was 10 to 16 years old, my father moved to Texas, and he was riding a quarter horse racing. And that's really where I got a lot of my riding experience, was riding the match races. Back then, they had all these like fair meets that you could be really any age and ride all the races and match races. And my first race, it was right outside of Austin, Texas, and quarter horse race, I didn't expect to ride that day. My father was gambling. They were betting on horse. My horse is going to beat your other horse. And they were sitting in trailers. They matched the horse up. But my father says, you know what we're going to do? My son's going to ride the race. Do you want to see me look up scared? I'm like, I'm what? I'm 11 years old. And I've been.
You had no idea that was coming?
I had no idea. But my first race came like, you're going out there and going to ride it. But I've been working horses and galloping horses before I was 11, for a solid time before this happened. Yeah, I ended up riding the match race and ended up winning, drawing away. And I think I had my eyes closed half the race. I really think I did.
Wow, so you won your first race.
It was only in one other horse, so yeah. So I'm not going to brag on it, but yeah, my first, it was a match
race.
Beat
him like a drum.
Yeah, it just, but it was pretty cool. I don't think I probably weighed like 80 pounds. I mean, maybe even 70 pounds.
Wow.
But between that age to 16, my official age, every weekend in Texas, they had these unofficial match races. And that's where I went. And I mean, you see all these, like you hear Randy Romero and Jerry Bailey, they all talk to Louisiana. I kind of did the same thing, but in Texas. And I rode match races against chickens, other kids.
Chickens?
Yeah, they strapped chickens to the back of horses and unofficial races.
No.
That's how I kind of come up before.
Wait, so
I was
the chicken
16.
Was the jockey?
Yeah, they'd have a hood on them, and the chicken really didn't, like I was, didn't have nothing, had no idea what was coming until the gates opened.
Wow.
And it's only a quarter mile.
Did you ever
mile.
Get beat by a chicken?
Yes, I did, sir.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. I mean, come on, man. He weighed 5 pounds. Handicapping horses does add up. I mean, weight is a big, big thing, even to now. That's why I love handicap races. It does pay off. And match races, they kind of took advantage of it. And that's why I was riding so many match races. I was a lot lighter than any of the riders. And I had some experience, and it really was a big advantage to ride the match races at that age.
Did you ever get to watch your dad ride?
Yeah, I rode against him. No. Yeah, we rode races against each other, and several he beat me, I beat him, and it's different, you know? I mean, like, now you see the I-Red brothers, him and Jose are riding against each other. It's kind of wild. That's your family. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What was it like at home?
Yeah, we kind of, you know, rode the race, and that was it, and we left it alone. I mean, we were not going to drag it out to home. I might not have got fed. I was only a teenager. I knew my place.
Did your dad always want you to be a jockey?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. You know, I owe everything I've ever done in racing to him. I mean, my mother and father divorced when I was like 10 years old, and kind of at that 10-year-old age, he took me in my arms, and that was my schooling. I never did go to college, nothing, and I guess my college degree was going to match race all over Texas, really.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was kind of how it started out.
So you credit him as being your mentor during your learning years?
100%, 100%.
How about your grandfather?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, man, a lot of the old timers around South Florida, they all know him. I mean, he galloped horses into like the 70s, almost 80 years old. And grandfather is just, he was a big asset down racing.
Yeah.
So when did you ride your first official race?
It was a Calder race course. It was 1988. I started out, I went down for the Gulfstream meet. When I turned 16, I looked so young. They made me, had to go through a lot of testing to see if I was actually 16 years old, because they said I looked like 12 years old. They says there's no way he's 16. And they made me put off, and I ended up riding my first race at Calder. And about a week to two after that, I win my first race for a trainer, Louis Oliveris. All the Southern trainers know him. A horse called Daffy Dak, down the middle track and gone and drove off by plenty. And ever since then, it's been written.
Wow. You didn't stay down there very long, though, did you?
No, I've only stayed there for probably about a month or two. And I ended up getting hooked up with a stable of Glenn Hild. Glenn and Sharon Hild was the big stable at Philadelphia Park at the time. And they asked me to come up and help him out and ride for him, Philadelphia. And that's really, I came up underneath when I had the bug, was Glenn and Sharon Hild. And I remember many a days as a bug, I'd ride the race, and after race, have to go back to the barn and make sure I hurried back to the barn and wash them, feed them, clean the stall, and do pretty much whatever had to be done with the horse. Jock, you're not just a jock. You did everything before you had to.
That's old school.
You know, and that's where I came up. You know, I mean, I was a 16-year-old kid, and I worked for it.
So you learned horsemanship, not just how to ride.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was everything. I mean, it was the last part I learned about was riding a race. I learned about the animal itself way before I even learned about riding a race. You didn't actually learn how to ride and race till you lost the bug. And then you really started opening your eyes and more of handicapping the race than the animal.
Yeah, the it's different part. Now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
With the young kids that come up today?
Well,
for a lot of them?
Christina, I mean, this McCarran School, and there's a lot of schools that are coming up, and Puerto Rico has been doing it for years. But I guess learning as much knowledge is key. I mean, learning the basics of any job. I don't care if you're working in a restaurant, a bar, a lawyer. You got to learn
whatever it is. Learn all the different.
You want to look at the other angle before you make your decision.
Exactly. And when you figure out how the horse actually works, not just when you're riding the horse, but all around, it can only help you. Exactly. It can only help you. And did you watch a lot of replays or?
Back then, I really didn't have too much of the replays. It was just actually watching the races itself. Now I love it. Watch the daily race form, you have the trouble trips, and you just hit the trouble trip, and you can watch the replay. I mean, so handicapping these days is technology today. I mean, they didn't have cell phones when I was 16. It's really simple now.
You used the phrase, I worked for it, and nobody would ever question the work ethic of Joe Bravo. You've always had to work hard to get to where you are, and I know that that's something that, even to this day, you still incorporate into your week, into your daily regimen.
Yeah, I mean, but it's, to me, it's not work. It's life. It's fun. I mean, you go out there because it's an experience. Every time I go out in the morning, you just have no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
I mean, for a loose horse to a horse being your next superstar, you have no idea. And that's what makes it really fun out there. It's like playing a game of Monopoly every day of life.
What was the biggest challenge when you were first getting started?
I guess getting people to believe that you wanted it so much, really. I think in this and anything, it's just getting people to believe in you. One of my biggest things, I've been injured a lot of times, and one of the biggest things, reason why I've been able to keep riding for so long is having the people behind you. Most of all my injuries, when I came back, I was able to ask a trainer or a friend. I mean, I could go anywhere from John Dowd to Eddie Broom to Kelly Breen to just local friend. I consider them friends, not trainers I work for. I say, hey, I need a horse to make me look good the first race back that I ride. Because a lot of people look, when you're hurt and you're out for a couple of months, how's this kid going to come back and act on his first horse? And when a horse drags you around there, it's the best feeling in the world. And that's what people look at. And that's what kind of kept my racing career going, because a lot of people ask, like right now, I'm 43 years old. They say, well, when are you going to retire? I says, it's not the money aspect of it. It's going out there and just everyday experience of doing it. If you had to work hard at it, I wouldn't be doing this probably not too much longer. It's no way. It's a tough job. But when you have fun at it, it's really fun going out there.
Yeah. How many jockeys have told us that on this program, Christina? You think about the injuries. And Joe, as you mentioned, you've had a bunch. You even broke your back. What, back in 06?
Four times I broke my back.
Yeah. Well, what on earth, and as somebody who has never ridden in a race, what on earth makes you want to come back after something like that and put yourself at risk again?
You're dealing with it. Thoroughbreds. I mean, there are horses that people love. There are, a lot of people make them their pets. I'm able to enjoy their pets as my everyday job. It's pretty fun dealing with them.
You know it's going to happen, but I know from experience that when you're hurt and you're on the sidelines, all you can think about is getting back. You hate to be just sitting there watching your horses that you were riding before go out and run and win, and you're not there. And you have to know exactly what I'm talking about.
Completely, Christina. You're completely right. I mean, one of my saddest moments, I've got hurt way before this, but my last time when I broke my back, I was really like in a hole. It was really depressing because I didn't think I was ever going to be able to ride again. I mean, and that would probably made me the saddest of my whole riding career. All the other injuries, I knew I was able to get over it and be able to make it back. It's just going to take time for it to heal. But being able to come back from the last one, it was like really cool. And I'm just trying to take a full advantage of it. Don't work hard at it. I think I want to prolong this riding career as long as possible because it's fun. I mean, especially this time of year. It's Derby. We're out there hunting every day for the next Derby mount. It's pretty cool.
How do you keep that positive mental outlook when you do have an injury like that and you don't know if you're going to get back? How do you keep that positivity?
You better love your job, right? I mean, I love it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Not being able to have it, it's kind of tough.
We're here with jockey Joe Bravo joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And Joe, I know that, like you said, going out there and looking for the next big horse and just that hope that you have, that looking forward to something is probably what helps get you out of bed every day, like we were talking about before the show. And so, you know, how is it for you? People know who you are now. People know you have a great reputation. How is it for you going out there looking for that next big horse?
I don't know for them, but for me, I just love the hunt of going out there looking for it. I can't tell you what people are thinking at the moment, but last year I ran third in the Derby with Danza for Pletcher, and I didn't win the race, but one of my best thrills, and you know what, makes it every year, just that little shine of hope of finding a superstar, and it was a stumble. Todd asked me to go to Arkansas and ride him out there, and the horse ended up winning and paying a huge price, and look here, that could happen tomorrow. Just the next opportunity of somebody believing in you. I'm not saying I'm the best jockey out there, but darn, I love it. I'm going to work hard at it, and I guarantee I'll try my best. That's all.
When does that process begin of looking for that special Derby horse? Months before?
After you have your cup of coffee in the morning, every day. Every day, because you never know when it's going to come up. Anywhere from, I like going to the sales. You go to the sales, not to purchase, nothing like that. Just looking at tomorrow's future. I'm seeing where they're coming, the breeding. A lot of horses I've rode that are having their babies coming up and seeing what they look like compared to their mother and father. It's a fun game. It's not just the race. The race is probably the least important of the whole thing about winning the race. It's growing the baby up, developing them, make sure he's staying healthy, and make sure that horse has a good long career.
So you mentioned the Derby, Joe, and tell us about that experience, your trip to the Kentucky Derby last year.
It was the third time able to ride the Derby. Yeah. And the whole being there from the draw, the post position, man, that's nerve wracking. You're sitting there with everybody talking about nerve wracking because it's out of your control. When you ride a race, that's easy. That's my control. I can tell you if I'm going left or right. Now, you have no control when it comes to the draw, and you're next to the owner, and your face is dropped when you draw the one hole or the 20 hole. It's like, no. I like being in control, and in a race, I am in control. In a draw, I'm not. But leading up to it, of every aspect, everybody's, what about social media? Going up to the draw, it's great. Everybody's like commenting on every time a horse comes off the track, hey, that horse sneezed. Right, he sneezed. It didn't matter, nothing. A horse stubbed his toe, and the press is so much onto it. You just gotta have faith in your animal and your connections.
How much different was it this time around than, say, the first time that you went to the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah, it's pretty much like anytime you go to your office. The first time you go to your office to do anything, you're kind of wide-eyed, like, uh-oh, what's expected? And then this time going, you kind of know what's expected, and you kind of know what's going to go down, and you're not really worried about, oh, the song. And the song is awesome, it is, I mean, but you're really toned on keeping your horse in check with himself more than being wide-eyed. So having that experience of being there and doing it, it's a big help.
So, Joe, I read somewhere that when you ride at Monmouth Park, and I'm sure this happens everywhere you ride, but you know to the exact how the tide comes in the water and how that affects the track. And so you are so attentive to detail. And so how do you use that at other tracks?
Gulfstream, you could use it out there close to the track. But now since Gulfstream got the new, they raised the track, so it don't really go much on the tides. But I guess Del Mar. I didn't really ride too much of Del Mar, but they're kind of like that. A keenless surface is always going to be like throughout the day. But if you're at Monmouth Park, it's close to the ocean. I mean, they have a canal that goes right up to there. That's the salt water. I mean, so when the tides come in, you can see the actual track being darker of a shade of dirt. And you know there's moisture in it. And it's going to carry harder, faster surface. Speed carries a lot easier. But then like later in the day when the tides are out, or you'll see it paler of a white sand. It's just beach. It's beach. It's really hard for a horse to get through there. And that's just something I grew up in knowing.
All right. So there is a home field advantage for jockeys?
I guess every home field advantage is, yeah, just knowing the little part. I guess Calvin Perrell got a little home court advantage, I guess. He's won a lot of derbies and doing that rail, so you try to take techniques from everybody.
All right, for people that didn't hear that last question, there is a home field advantage for jockeys. We've heard that before, and a lot of people, when they're looking at jockeys at certain racetracks, will say, oh, well, he rides here all the time. He's going to be a good bet today because he rides here. He knows the racetrack. But there is some truth to that.
Yes, it is. I mean, yeah. Just knowing your atmosphere around you, you're not sitting there on a horse going, oh, wow, check out. That's a really cool Teletron that's up there behind at the 5/8 pole at Churchill Downs. You know it's there, and you don't pay attention to that, and you're concentrating on your animal. You know what? It's a little pet peeve, and I have to tell you, yeah. At the races, like, my biggest thing, a person hires me to ride a race in the paddock area. Here I am on the horse going out to ride a race. My biggest pet peeve is having friends at the races, and they're going, Joe, hey, Joe. And I'm like, dude, call me later. I got a million people that have my name. That's one of my reasons. If you see, I don't care if it's raining or not, I have dark goggles on because I don't want to be worried about the fans. I'm going to concentrate on nobody else. Hey, Joe, what are you doing? Dude, I'm on the back of a horse. I want to get the full amount of everything, and I want to read everything that horse is giving me. Every kind of, if he's nervous, is he walking positively? Is he walking like you know, he's a little cautious here. There's a reason why he's not in a forwardly pace. I only have a couple of minutes before I go to a starting gate and trying to get as much information from that horse as I can. I'll talk to you guys later. I don't want anybody to talk to. Boo. I don't care if it's my mother or father at the races. This is work time. That man hired me to ride his race. I'm going to give full concentration to that animal, that post-parade.
Yeah, you have to be focused at that point. I guess after the race is when you can come back. Like, say at Saratoga, for example, you walk back through, kids are coming up asking for autographs. I don't think I've ever seen Joe Bravo not grant an autograph.
But that's after the race. And that's part of that. You know, right. If you have something to say to me, hey, come grab me after a race. What are you doing tonight? That's great. My phone number, half America probably has my phone number. It's open to everybody. I have no problem answering questions. But that 5 minutes before I go to the starting gate, the only one that has my concentration is the horse I'm sitting on. I'm trying to get as much information. They can't talk and say, hey, listen, this is not, you know, going right today. I'm trying to read all the information I possibly can off the animal.
What can you tell in the paddock or the walking ring before, once you get that leg up? Are there things you can tell before you get onto the track?
Well, a lot of horses, they could give you a positive vibe, a negative vibe. I had many more times I come back after racing, I told the trainer, man, he just had a negative outlook of the horse. You know, you're sitting home with your dog, and you know the dog, and you could tell when he's just negative that day. A horse, they do the same thing. Just every time you ask him to do something, it's a negative vibe. And you could just see something is not right. I don't know if it was the van ride over to the track, if he has some kind of issue going on, but you're trying to pick up all that off of him.
So, Joe, I know that speaking for myself, this job brings out your charisma, your personality, because you are basically selling yourself as the best jockey for the job. Were you a shy kid growing up? Were you always so outgoing? Tell us about little Joe Bravo as a kid.
I don't know, man. I probably needed Retlin or something. When I was a kid, I was probably a little hyper.
No.
As, you know, I hope I grew out of a little bit of it, you know, but yeah, I guess I was mischievous, you know. a lot of times I skip school to make it to the racetrack once or twice.
Imagine that. Imagine that.
Yeah, shocker.
Yeah, so my concentration was not on books. It was probably going back to the track.
Were you always athletic? Have you always, do you still consider yourself, you know, you, I don't know, throw around a ball?
No, I used to play a lot of basketball and a lot of sports, and yeah, I love it. I like staying active.
Till the heat cut him.
Yeah. Well, I was so depressed after the heat cut me, you know? It's just a funny joke. I love it. I do love basketball, but not, I don't play too many sports now anymore. I try to stay healthy for racing.
3 minutes here, we'll have to get to a commercial break, but I'm always curious. You mentioned getting on the back of the horse, learning everything you can, how focused you are before the race. Do you hear fans that might heckle you from time to time when you're on the back of the horse, or are you so focused that that all gets drowned out?
You don't hear a lot of heckling before race, because I think that's the last thing you want to do is piss a jock off before he goes to the starting gate. I've never had too many heckles before the race. After the race,
What's the worst?
I heard everything.
What's the worst you had?
Oh, nah, I mean, fall off and, you know, that's that. You know, the one that gets me is telling me, hey, I hope you get hurt next one, because, I mean, at any race, any jock, that is the worst thing that can happen, is be sitting on the sidelines. But you hear everything. We're sitting here in Lexington, Kentucky, right? This is the greatest place ever. This is the only racetrack in the country I've rode at that I had a 1-5 shot get beat up the track. And I come back cringing, and I hear the fans are saying, hey, good job, good try, good job. I'm like, holy cow, we're not in Kansas no more, are we?
Would that happen in New Jersey?
Oh, they want to kill you. They bet they earn money. I mean, they bet their money, and they deserve to holler and scream at you and call you every name in the book afterwards. They think so. But listen, man, we're trying to do the best we can out there. They're animals, and that's why it's a gamble. And you're trying to get the most out of them. And most of the time, you'll find out why that 1-5 shot got beat. A couple days later, you'll see the horse comes down sick. He's got an issue someplace. And it's not just the actual rating or race. It's the animal out there running.
Is it sometimes hard not to come back at somebody when they do say things like, oh, I hope you get hurt, or it's really something really derogatory? Is it hard to not to hold your tongue?
I got in trouble a couple times responding, and I learned the best. Don't respond, because all you're doing is adding gasoline to the fire. I mean, I've responded a couple times. Yeah. And especially Jersey's like family to me. And yeah, I had a couple of people get talked to. they were straightened out real quick.
Yeah. It's one thing to say you're a bum, you rode a bad race, but if they start getting personal, it's like any athlete. It's like that with football players, with baseball players. It's the same thing. Yeah. And it has to be, you know, at some point there's a breaking point to everybody.
Let me ask you guys a question. Who said it's okay to scream and holler and curse at any athlete after a football game, basketball game?
Right.
And those jocks, dude, we're just trying. That's all. We're trying.
Yeah.
We do get a lot of abuse about that. And you know what? After from doing it for so many years, you respond. You're just going to add gasoline to the fire. You just got to realize they lost their money and they're upset and they're going to say what they want to say. So leave it alone.
We will continue our visit with Jockey Joe Bravo after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Hello, this is Kayla Strah, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
I'll have another. He comes here to Churchill Downs. He gets the victory here impressively.
Today, the Phipps and Janney families and their trainer, Shug McGahee, with Joel Rosario, all headed to the winner's circle.
California Chrome, California Bred, he wins on this afternoon.
Only the fourth time a Cal Bred has won the Kentucky Derby.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
And Lionheart just keeps rolling right along. He went 3/4 in 1/10 and 2. He's in front by 2.5 lengths at the quarter pole. My Snooki's Boy second, Rock Hard 10 is third, and he's put to pressure. He's got to do better. Here comes Pye's Prospect, and he starts to roll, but Rock Hard 10 comes, and then at the 8th pole, it's Lionheart in front by 2. My Snooki's Boy is running another big one on the outside. He's coming to the outside of Lionheart. My Snooki's Boy second, running out of time. Here's the wire, and Lionheart has won the Haskell by a length.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Christina McManigal, and jockey Joe Bravo here. And we just heard the replay of the 2004 Haskell Invitational Handicap. Joe Bravo, you were aboard Lionheart. Tell us about that.
Lionheart was great. It was Petra Biancon gave me a lot of big chances, I'll tell you that. I really, one of my biggest things, I got to thank him for it, rode one of my first derbies for him. But Lionheart that afternoon, we were going to sit off the pace and everything that day. And remember, kind of before the commercial, we were talking about knowing the surface, knowing everything. It happened to be that Moff Park Day was having one of them speed bias tracks that the tides came in, surface got fast, and it was a speed track. From sitting off the pace, so what we had planned to do the entire time, Patrick kind of was seeing it at the races, and he came over to Josh and he says, Joe, in his French accent, Joe, we might have to change things up here a little bit, you know. He come up to me, you know, with the French accent, and Joe, listen, it's not too... I try to be funny, I'm not too good at the French accent. But it's just knowing their surroundings, and in horse racing, you got to adapt to the last-minute issues. And it was so cool that he did everything that I was thinking, he was saying to me right before the race, and we popped out of the gate. I used him a little bit the first jump. And it was all over a minute, the first jump right away. He broke in front and kind of put it in big red ears and galloped around there just in ease and full control. And made it so special all the way down the lane. All I could think was, dude, I run second in this race how many times? And I had to ride the out-of-town horse that come and beat me every time. And most of the time I was riding a local horse. And I don't know what the stats say, but I think I ran second in the Haskell. I'm telling you, at least 5 or 6 times. To run second in a $1 million race that many times, wow, it's frustrating. To finally win it was cool, but... it just seemed like every time I come in there, it was a superstar and horse of the year. And Baffert brought in the next horse of the year to come and beat me, and I had to run second to him. And that day was my day to shine. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, that had to be a huge thrill for you to finally break through in the Haskell, being a New Jersey guy.
Yeah, it really is. I don't know if I should say it on air, but we had a little celebration that night that went to very morning hours that night after the Derby. Let's put it like that. It was a little celebration. I think half the town in the back of my house that night.
That was pre-Tito's vodka days, too, so...
I would have felt better the next morning.
Yeah, Tito's.
If I had Tito's, yes.
So, Joe, that horse, you got him to relax. I watched the replay last night, and he's just cruising around there, just relaxed as can be. How do you get a horse to do that?
Good horses make you look good. The bad ones, not so much. They make you work for it. But the good ones, man, you just kind of lead them the way, and they kind of take over from there. And that's what kind of Lionheart was. He just kind of jumped out there, and he felt control and positive about everything, and he loved it.
You had another horse kind of along those same lines by the name of Formal Gold, and gave you a milestone in your career, your first grade one win in the Don Handicap. Tell me about him.
Yeah, I mean, that was my first grade one winner at Gulfstream Park in 97. I mean, you know what, tell you the truth, let's rewind a little bit, made that race so special. It was a competitor there that in that afternoon, a horse called Skipaway. Anybody hear Skipaway? He was like, I think, horse of the year.
He's pretty good.
All right. I was working him for over a year, like all the time for Sonny Hine. And he had me working him. It was probably one of my fastest breeze. I breezed any horse was at Belmont Racetrack. He put in three rabbits in one. I'm on Skipaway now. I end up coming back and I asked the clocker, hey, what'd they catch me in? He whoa. I said, what'd he say? He went, whoa. I said, he did not just say, I worked the horse in 108 for 3/4 of a mile, did he? The clocker told me that. I was pale. I'm going back to the barn thinking, Sonny Hine's going to kill me. I just worked Skipaway in 108. Sonny was never so happy in my life. He was ecstatic. Now he's ready. We got him right. And you know what? Later on that year, entries come out. Skipaway's in a race, and I'm on Formal Gold. I know all of Skipaway's things. He's a big train. He's got one gear, and he's fast and strong. Formal Gold, complete opposite run of style. Always relax, breathe, and he'll give you a strong eighth of a mile. So I knew if I could stay near Skipaway and don't let him start his run early down the backside, I could sprint away and get him that day. And man, I love when a plan come together. it was everything set up the whole race while I'm reading. I'm like, I know how good Skipaway is, but I got Formal Gold relaxed, breathing underneath me, breathing, and knowing that his turn of foot is going to pull away, and that's what happened. We turned for home, and he switched leads. He was able to spurt away, and it came back that Skipaway won the Breeders' Cup that year and won several other races. But when it come horse to horse, I knew that turn of foot, he could not keep up. It made it even that more special.
I'm sure Sonny Hines was not too happy that he let you work that horse so many times. He knew him.
Paybacks. He always promised me the mount on Skipaway. Don't worry, Joe, next time you ride him. And I had to sit behind Jerry Bailey Road, Santa, Shane Sellers, and I always had to sit and wait in my place. And it's for a rider, it was kind of nice to beat a horse that you worked. I'm going to say if it was a one time, it was 20 times I worked the horse with no doubt. And to beat him, it was pretty fun. But that's what makes the game so much fun out there, just knowing your homework and learning every day, learning experience. That's how you win races.
You mentioned some pretty big names there with guys like Jerry Bailey and Jose Santos. Who would you say is probably the best rider that you've ever ridden with?
Wow. I mean, like I say, horses make riders, but riders that think, you can't get much better. Bailey really thinks a race out great. Mike Smith, who's friggin' stronger than him? He lives in a gym. The man's amazing. The most physical guy you could ever imagine. You could take Jeter, Terrell Owens. Mike Smith, I'll put him against anybody. Yeah, physically, he's amazing. And you learn that. You learn what made him do that. It's the willpower. Mike wants it. Jose Santos, probably one of the best turf riders you've ever seen. And that's what I give a lot of my turf riding is from watching Santos. And who is more chillier than Pat Day and Bill Shoemaker? They didn't even look like they moved on a horse, but they got the most run out of a horse. Everybody has their little thing that makes them special. I mean, I could go down a list and name every rider there's been. Angel Cordero, man, he had the race outthought before you even left the jocks room. I mean, he talked so much stuff that he knew what everybody was supposed to do before they even got to the gate. I mean, and you could go down a list of everybody, but the biggest asset is paying attention to your surroundings and knowing their strengths when you ride against them.
It sounds like you studied those other riders quite a bit.
No, I lived with them, man. I mean, every day.
But you learn their strengths, their weaknesses, their tendencies. And have you taken some of the things as you've come up through the years from guys like Cordero, from guys like Mike Smith and Jerry Bailey and kind of incorporated them into your style as well?
Of course. I mean, but that's, I don't care if you're a lawyer, you're going to sit there and watch Cochran. I mean, when you want to do something good, you watch the guys who've done it, and them are the guys who've really done it. I mean, look at the, you know, I mean, through the years, I love sitting there watching the old racing. Those people, they were a nobody before. I mean, they wanted it, and that's what made every rider successful. And baseball player, football player, you go out there, and that's why they are successful, is because they wanted it.
As you mentioned with Skipaway, you knew that horse and knew how to beat him. And do you ever think about that when you're coming down to the wire and you got some jock right next to you and you know him and you know what his weaknesses are? Do you use that too?
Yeah, you can. But you know what? When it comes to a rider's weakness, the horse is going to prevail no matter what. So you might have a rider that you might have the most, you know, respect for. But the horses, when it comes down to it, it's horsepower. When you turn for home, they're going to take over and do it. I've never seen a horse make a jockey make a horse run faster than what he possibly can. They could screw up and slow down, but you can't make a horse run faster than what they possibly can.
All right, you talked about all of their strengths. What do you think they would say would be Joe Bravo's biggest strength if I asked them?
I hope they say I love my job, and I really just like to go out there and enjoy it. That's all, you know?
Yeah.
Me, I go out there, like I say, I'm not the best jock in the world, but I love it. I want to go out there and try at it, and I'll try my best. That's all I can promise you.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're closing in on 5,000 career victories, and you think about that mark, only 30 riders in history have ever accomplished that feat. Don't sell yourself short. You're pretty darn good, my friend.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of fun. I think I had one of the interviewer guys say, "Hey, Joe, do you just like all of a sudden like pop up and say, wow, how did I get here to 5,000 winners? I'm like, Sir, hell no. There's a lot of work in between that 5,000 wins. Nothing is given to you, you know? It's a lot of work. But I appreciate every day that I had to go out there and do it because, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, right, well, let's walk back through then and some of the other milestones. What do you remember about getting number 1,000? Tell me about that day.
That was a while ago. You stopped me, Mike. Come on.
That was a few broken backs and a couple of concussions.
I mean, you try to, you know, just work on the future, you know.
Yeah. How about number 4,000? Let's fast forward there.
I'd say more of 3,000 was more memorable.
Really?
Yeah, that there I did at the Meadowlands when I for a he was a owner at the time, but he trained. He did a little bit in the game. Richard Engler gave me a shot, and it was just an average everyday claiming race. But that's what I kind of succeed my whole career is everyday races make you who you are tomorrow. And it was just an everyday race, but that was my milestone. My 3,000 winner was just an everyday race. And that's what I love about my life. It's the everyday excitement of going out there and doing it. That's really what makes it so cool. So all the milestones kind of come together.
Do you think about the next milestone that's right almost within your grasp? Do you think about that?
I'm worried about waking up tomorrow morning and going and enjoying it and walking. You know, I'm worried about is making it to the showers every day after riding. If I win a race or I don't win a race, that's what I concentrate on, is going out there and just having a next day to go and enjoy what I love. I mean, the milestones, I can't make a horse win, so I have no control when my next winner is going to be. It's up to the horse. Hopefully I sit on some nice, fast ones the next 8 winners I need.
Well, yeah, do you just want it over with now? Do you just want to get to that 5,000 and put it behind you? Is there a sense of that going through your mind now?
I guess, Mike, you could say that, but I'm really not concentrating on the 5,000 win.
Yeah.
I'm really, right now, I've been totally focused on the Derby coming up, that I'm going to let the winners come and go and as they come, and I'm not really looking for that. I'm looking out there to try to find the next superstar horse. I'm doing this job because I love it, of finding the next horse I sit on could be the next horse winner Triple Crown. They're so wide open right now that's what I'm really concentrating on. I'm not looking for the next, oh, I got to win the next one to make my 5,000 winner. No, all milestones kind of come and go. I'm looking to just get the most out of my next horse and looking to get the good ones. That's going to be straight up real.
Well, you got the most out of another horse, many horses, but tell us about Little Mike.
Ah, what a cool horse he was. Ah, Little Mike, you know, I'm so glad you brought his name up. Here's a horse, one of my first times I worked him, it was at Monmouth Park before he ever sat on the grass. I worked him on a dirt. I'm like, this is not too much of a horse. He's just a horse. And Carlo, me and him have been friends for 20 years before he ever trained horses, before he ever owned horses. He called me up. He says, Joe, I got a horse sitting in Monmouth Park. We have high hopes for him. Come and work him. I'm like, I had to call him after the workout and say, you worked okay. It was just average work. Nothing exciting. Just, you know. But that's what made Little Mike so special. He went out there in every race he ran before the race. I'd be like, Carlo, I don't know if he could do it. He's stepping up from his maiden race to an allowance race. I don't know, you know, and you want to do good for people that that are friends, and I always considered Carlo a friend of mine because we go back so history, that I didn't want to let him down by having so built up before the race thinking we can't get beat, that when you get beat, you're really sad, you know? I mean, it really hurts. So every time I rode him, it was like, I don't know if he could do it today. That little horse, when he turned for home, at least 3 to 4 times out of all those races, at the 8th pole, he was passed by another horse. And it was nothing I did. Nobody the trainer did. It was what that horse had inside of him that put his ears back and made him pass the other horse and come back to win at least 3 to 4 different times that I've rode him. Wow. Through those races, before he ever won a Breeders' Cup, before he ever won an Arlington Million, it was the horse. That's what made everybody around him. Ramon Dominguez did a tremendous job on him in the Arlington Million by getting him to relax, slowing down the pace. And that day when they turned for home, I says, Ramon rode the perfect race, like keeping him quiet and relaxed. That I knew he was going to spurt off and nobody was going to get by him that day. And look what he did in the Breeders' Cup. He sat off the pace. He didn't have to be in front. He knew where the winner's circle was. That's why I say good horses overcome everything. He'll be a horse you could never forget.
Yeah. Who are some of the other horses that you've been around? We talked about Formal Gold. We talked about Lionheart. Now Little Mike. Who are a couple others that you're never going to forget?
You know what? Probably one of the best two-year-olds I've ever sat on. I'll go through different categories. Two-year-old colt, Monmouth Park. I go to the starting gate, and before I go to the starting gate, I have the trainer and owners are telling me this could be one of the greatest horses, and I'm like, okay. Because every owner and trainer think that is the greatest horse until you put them in competition. That is their dream. And I get to the start gate, and the starting gate, Joe, this horse has never broken out of the gate. And so I'm thinking, I got the people are telling me he's the greatest. And the odds board, he was dead favorite that day, first time out. We break out of the gate. I'm dead last. I don't know, one pole with 12 horses at Monmouth Park. I'm sitting there going, oh, what is going on here? But he's dead last, but he's doing it so inside of himself. And I'm like, man, he took off, turning for home now. This is a horse I'm just hearing about, never sat on, never seen. And I asked him one moment, and one moment only. He exploded so fast underneath me. He sat me in the back of the saddle and went from last to first, and that horse's name was DeHare. DeHare ended up being one of the best stallions it was. He ended up coming back to Saratoga, win several horses, had a short racing career, but talent-wise, probably one of the best, and look at him now.
Wow.
One of the best stallions. But for two-year-old colts that never seen or never heard of, he impressed me that day.
Yeah, he was special.
Yeah.
What a cool really experience. Special.
I mean, yeah, I remember him. He ran against my holy bull, didn't he?
Yeah. DeHare.
Yeah. I remember that. DeHare was
Mike's
really
favorite.
Cool.
Mike has his favorite over here.
He was really cool.
What'd you ever think about a horse called Forest Wildcat? Another stallion that done everything.
Yeah.
He was an eye-opener to me. He really, you know. He was a horse that I can never forget. I've went all over the country, everywhere from Suffolk Downs to Keeneland to Miami to Jersey. He won Philadelphia. Just didn't matter what he did. But for sprinter-wise, I'd have to say Forest Wildcat was probably one of the tops. You know.
Yeah. How much has Joe Bravo changed as a rider over the years?
Don't let the little things bother you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to say everything's not said and done right at that moment. Look at the big picture, the end of the year, you know, just go out there and enjoy yourself and put yourself in a good place. And I think you're going to make everybody around you happy.
So Joe, we've talked about many big horses that all had different running styles. You just talked about a few. And what, regardless of the horse, what is your favorite style to ride? Sometimes jockeys even get classified in a group as far as, oh, he's a speed rider. He's a come from behind rider. What do you think is your preference?
I like to win. Does winning consider as a preference?
Well, you know.
Any way to get to the winner's circle? Nah, I hear what you're saying. I'm just making fun. Tayshia, I like a horse that could think and breathe and is in control of himself. Horses, it's not much worse feeling that you're in front all the way, and then you turn for home, and you might be two in front, turn for home, but you know you're empty. It's really tough, and you do. You get stamped as a type of rider that rides these type of races. When I was younger, everybody says, oh, speed rider. Now you're older, and you're thinking, oh, a rider comes off turf. I don't care what you think. What I know at my own ability is I can read a horse. I can read and tell you what he wants to do. I think that's my biggest strength is just knowing and dealing with so many horses in the past that when they come to paddock, okay, this is stamped. Look at the body of him. He's got a big buttocks, pushing off sprinter's kind of style. He's not going to prolong. He's not that long lean. He's not going to give you that long sustained run. That's my biggest strength is being able to read the animal. Not even riding the race. Sitting close to the pace, sitting last at the pace. It doesn't matter. It really don't. It's being able to read the horse. That's my strength, I would consider.
I know you love the game. You said that a couple of times now, Joe, but I'm kind of curious about what's still motivating you and driving you outside of the milestones? You said you're not even focusing on 5,000, but what other things motivate and drive Joe Bravo?
Just going out there and doing my job. An old friend of mine used to own restaurants in Jersey. I looked up to very, very well. Manny Basil Plasteris, God rest his soul, passed away a few years ago. We used to sit down and talk all the time. He was on a commission in Jersey for race commission. He says, Joe, life's like a painting. He says, it's a blank canvas when you start your career out, and I don't care what job you do. So your career, you got to think about every brush, every action you do in life is going to be that painting. You tell me when you're gone what that painting you want it to look like. So you try to not to put any bad marks on there, and you just try to make sure what you do every day, your painting's okay.
What other brush strokes do you still want to make sure that you get on there before your career is concluded?
I never won a Triple Crown race. I want to go out there and do the best we can and make sure I leave a stamp that Joe enjoyed his job and went out there and got the most out of what he did.
Jockey Joe Bravo joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Joe, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Not ride many races, but enjoying life. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't mind just coming in and riding, you know, the good ones.
Really? Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. Quality
Mike
versus
Smith style.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, I mean, I love the good races. Who wants a horse that's going to be working hard? You know, you don't, you know, you want the cream of the crop.
Quality versus quantity.
Of course.
Exactly.
I said, Christina.
For sure.
Well, you think about everything that you have accomplished. And look, I told you before, don't sell yourself short. How do you view your role in the jocks room now, especially with some of the younger guys?
I don't know. I never looked at their way of looking at it. I have a lot of fun younger guys that are coming up and everything that haven't been riding a couple of years ago. That they're buddies of mine. It's all like family in the jockey's room. It's not looking up or trying to gain anything. I spend more time in the jocks room. I do a home. I mean, that is my family. You know, all the jocks. I got a lot of brothers and sisters out there to ride all over the country, and that's what, you know, you don't look to try to do anything out there than appreciate them.
Well, I can say that. I rode with Joe, and I would chip in, and, you know, from the time I was a young apprentice, and you'd chip into parks where I was usually riding at, and you were just fun, Joe. You just, you know, you make everyone relax and have a good time, and, you know, you don't stress people out, or, you know, it's all good, you know, and so you're very relaxed and fun to be around, and so I think people that rubs off on people, you know, and
that's the best compliment anybody could give. I think I'm gonna be real with you guys. That's the best compliment I ever got. Thank you.
Yeah. Always smiling. Always. I very rarely see Joe Bravo without a smile on his face.
The 5 minutes before I get to the starting gate, no smiles.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Let's pay attention to concentrate.
You're focused. But take me through your typical day, like a day, normal day. You're riding the card at Monmouth Park. What's a typical day?
I do get up early no matter what. I mean, I'm up every, but it's not really to go out there and get on horses. I like going to track and have my coffee. I sit there and have my coffee, and you soak up so much more of your surroundings just going up and being part of it, being able to see everything and being a part of that racing day. But no, to get on horses in the morning when you're on a busy day, a lot of times people ask me, hey, Joe, work a horse for me at Monmouth Park. I'm on 8 to 10 races this afternoon. Do you seriously want me to work a horse and then me be your jockey in the 8th or 10th race and my tongue is going to be hanging out exhausted? Do you want me to be that person that's exhausted riding your race and because I worked the horse out a half a mile for you? I mean, come on. It's just, that's why they're, you know, don't stress on the riders. I mean, those guys are paid to go out there, and I'm talk about me. Javier did something this year. Castellano is amazing. Florida Derby Day with 14 races.
Yeah.
Wow. When do you see 14 races? And you know what? He was strong, fit, and he was like an iron jock through all 14. I take my hat off him. Well,
How about the day that he flew back from, was it Saudi Arabia?
Yes.
And he got back, landed, came right to the track, and won at Gulfstream Park right off the plane?
Some of the stuff, like to be able to go out there, and that's willpower. That's what I'm saying, the will to want to do it. I take my hat off to Javier for doing stuff like that. I mean, I know what it is to ride that many races. At Monmouth Park, I've rode as many as 12 races a day, and I don't enjoy them. No. To go out there and ride 12 races, no. I mean, by the time the last couple races, you're going through the motions. I don't care what jock you are. I mean, it's physically demanding.
Yeah.
And to prepare yourself for it, I live in a gym. I love going to a gym when I'm not riding. There's no workout that can prepare you for that. None.
Though what always amazes me about riders, and I know you've both been there, but when you have to ride, let's say, in New York one day, and then the next day, you're riding in California. For example, Mike Smith did that this past weekend at Keeneland. He came to Keeneland from California, for the Transylvania Stakes. The Transylvania got rained out. They canceled the program. He never rode a horse. He had to ride the very next day back in California, so he has to hop on a plane, go right back, and then sometimes he might be riding back in New York the next day. How on earth do you keep it together and stay focused and keep up that energy level?
It's not really that hard, Mike. I've done it for years. I had one spring. I remember I was out of town 13 weekends in a row. I had to go to different racetracks, and during the weekends, I'd have to ride different racetracks. It's not really because you're traveling. You're not walking there. You're in the back of a plane. You're chilled out. You're relaxed. You know, unless you have a problem traveling physically, and you're, that person does. But I know Mike handled it well. He was a little upset that the horse got canceled because he went there really believing that horse could win. And yeah. I've been there many days. I flew in many times to racetracks, and for some sense, the horse had a scratch. It's frustrating. But the physical aspect of going and traveling, it's not – I love it. I love to go out of town to ride a race because your full concentration is to get the most out of it. So you're the homework on that plane, you're sitting there on that plane flight going to Woodbine, let's say. You're worried about, okay, let's see the conditions of the weather that day. Is it going to be a windy afternoon? How's the track going to be? Let's say the last couple of days of races, how the races were playing at that racetrack. And I've rode there. I'm just using Woodbine example. They have one of the strongest, longest stretches in the country. But I've rode there, and I've rode pretty much 90% of the racetracks in the country. And that's what you're concentrating on, that whole plane and flight. While your feet are up on the chair, you're relaxed, kick back, and they make traveling pretty comfortable. So that's pretty easy to do that. And that's one of my things I love to go do is go ride out of town and ride stake races. If a trainer is shipping a horse across country to run, he's not doing it for any other way than he really believes he can win.
Yeah.
And that's what I love to go do.
Drink lots of Monster too, right, Joe?
Yeah, it might get you a little hyper. In a plane, I don't like any energy drinks. In a plane, I want relax, you chill. Before the race, yeah, come on, let's go. Snickers, coffee, let's go.
Joe, you talk about willpower. Do you have to worry about your weight very much?
That's probably one of the reasons I was able to ride for so long. I know, I eat. I love eating. Tell me where the best... Hell, guys, tell me. Feed me the information. Where do I go eat in Lexington? I've been to Malone's like four times so far. Great restaurant. Need a little different. I love to eat. I love food. And that's one of the reasons I'm a little shorter than most riders. I'm only 5'2". So I'm a little bit more huskier. And I like to eat. I mean, and that's... If I had to watch my weight and every day not eat and then have to go out there and ride races, I'd be the most miserable person around and nobody would want to be around me. I love food.
What other things do you enjoy when you're not at the racetrack? You get a day off. What other things do you like to do?
I like fishing. I mean, everybody kind of knows that, you know, on my days off in Florida, I'm pretty much every weekend. I got my own personal captain there, Dave Fox, the horse trainer. He's pretty good setup. He has a house with two boats in the backyard. And
yeah.
So if it's bad weather, we could go into backcountry. If it's good weather, we shoot offshore. And matter of fact, I just think it's kind of funny. Mike, you were telling me you live in Versailles. I'll be going through Versailles plenty this meet. I found a farm. I can't tell you whose farm, but it's packed with largemouth bass. And I must have caught 30 largemouth bass the other day out there. And it's relaxing. It just makes you forget. Not the actual physical thing of fishing. It's just going out there and enjoying the weather, enjoying the Mother Nature, not trying to catch food. Most of the time I release 90% of the fish I catch. It's just going out there and enjoying Mother Nature's life, checking out the birds. Checking out the alligators that could come up next to you. You don't know what's out there. It's Mother Nature. Just being part of it. That's what I enjoy in my free time.
I've seen the Facebook pictures, Joe. You're pretty good at that.
Yeah, you got to have a good captain behind you. It's fun. You know,
well, David takes you out there fishing for those big fish down, right?
Yeah. But we just.
You ever catch one bigger than you?
Oh, yeah, plenty. Yeah, plenty. But really? It was really fun. We went out in this last fishing trip before. The week before I came up here, we went out and the captain brought his 9-year-old son. Now, you got to imagine, this is a 9-year-old son. Out of all the people, grabs the pole goes off. It's a fish on. Everybody screams. 9-year-old kid grabs it. Nobody knows what it is. Here it comes out of the water. It's an 80-pound sailfish. This 9-year-old boy, he's the captain's son, so he knows a little bit about fishing, brought in an 80-pound sailfish like it was no tomorrow. Me, I would have been exhausted. I would have been like, that was really so exciting to see this little kid had full control of the animal, brought the fish in, took pictures of him, and see you later. Have a good day, fish. We'll see you next year.
Wow. You talked about those pictures that you see. People can follow Joe at Bravo Ace on Twitter. Yeah. Where did the Bravo Ace come from?
It's kind of funny. Nowadays, I don't do many video games, but when I was a kid playing video games like Pac-Man and everything else, and when you got your name on the board, I never put my name. I always put Bravo Ace for what reason? I have no idea. And so it's kind of stuck with my kind of, I'm a dork. What do you want me to tell you? I'm sorry, I'm a dork.
All right, Joe. Well, unfortunately, our time is up. That flew by, Mike. That was fantastic to have you in studio, Joe Bravo.
We should go for another hour. Let's
extend
it. I think
we should.
Let's go 2 hours.
Sorry, Sirius, we're doing another hour.
Amazing.
You guys are awesome. Thank you. You guys are really awesome.
Thank you.
All the best, and good luck with getting number 5,000, too.
Thanks.
This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Yeah, we're back next week.
Back
same
next
time.
Week. Don't miss it.
Another jockey.
Another jockey.
And podcast of this program up there at horseracingradio.net. So go check it out if you missed any of it. And Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes.
Thanks for joining us.
All right. Talk to you next time.